Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Testing. Hi, Gavin. Is this loud enough? Yes. It's a nice place you got down here. Kind of lonely, though. I'm lonely right now, I guess you could say. This place has got plenty of characters.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is another sterling episode of Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it's one of the oldest independent publications in the entire U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture all over Salt Lake City and the environs beyond. This is a very special Pride-oriented episode of the Soundwaves podcast. We're going to talk to some folks from the Utah Pride Center about the upcoming festival and all the great things they do. We're going to talk to the Homeless Youth Resource Center about their great work, and Equality Utah is going to drop by as well. Stay tuned. The Utah Pride Center recently made a very big move for being a kind of small organization. They moved from their awesome little Marmalade District area to a new place over on 400 South. And that's just a representative of a lot of the great work that they've been doing lately. They've been growing in membership, growing in the activities they're involved with. And of course, most of us know them as the people behind the awesome Pride Parade and Festival every year, which is coming up just this weekend. Slug photographer Paul Duane sat down with the center's director of events, Megan Risbin, and talked about their brand new location and the current happenings all over Utah.
You've been in the Marmalade District for a while.
Yes.
And I'm curious to hear about the Pride Center's decision to move to a new spot.
Well, we had acquired our new building at 255 East, 400 South last year with the help of a generous donor who gave us the money to buy the building. We were renting our space in Marmalade. Yeah. And it was actually, we were at 6,000 square feet and the new building has 18,000 square feet.
Oh, wow.
So tripling our space so we can provide more community space, a larger youth center, actual mental health and HIV testing clinic.
Very cool.
So expanding our services and just being more available to the community. And it's a great downtown location. We're right off the Library Square track station. Our festival grounds are right across the street.
It's perfect.
And so it's super convenient for me.
It's great visibility from
exactly.
the street.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yes. The city is very excited. We moved down there just as they increase their support of the LGBTQ community.
Right.
The Downtown Alliance is very excited that we're there. In other states and other cities like Denver, Las Vegas, where their Pride centers have moved to downtown, it's actually increased business and it's actually brought up property values around those areas. And so the city's kind of hoping that we do the same thing.
Cool.
We're still in the remodeling phases of the building. We decided to save some money. We'd move into the new building now instead of waiting until after the renovations. And so we're going to have an open house on June 28th. And then we're going to continue doing the remodeling on the first floor to have a cafe, some larger event spaces and things like that. So we're really excited.
What bottlenecks were you experiencing at the old location that inspired the move to a new larger spot?
I think the biggest one was the access for our youth. So we have a youth activity center, and they're open in the afternoons and on Saturday. And a lot of youth just weren't able to take the train, or their parents wouldn't drive them.
Okay.
Or if they did take the train, they still had to walk three blocks.
Yeah.
And in the winter,
that
not
can be treacherous.
Fun. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so a lot of this, since it's right there, right off the Library Square track station, we're expecting a lot more foot traffic. We started a mental health clinic last year.
Mm-hmm.
We've received a lot of just drop in clients, and so we're hoping with this new location we'll just even expand that program even further.
That's really cool. On the flip side, you know, there's the SAGE program.
Yes, yeah.
And I wanted to learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah, our SAGE program is
SAGE is a national program,
right? It is.
Program,
it's a national program, and some SAGE programs in other states are run by their community centers or just run by a complete opposite SAGE organization. So a few years ago, we had applied for some grants from the National SAGE organization to help fund this program, which is for LGBTQ people over the age of 50.
Perfect.
So we have a full-time staff member who divides his time between the SAGE program and then other outreach types events.
Mm-hmm.
They do social activities, fun little potlucks, and they also do advocacy. So it's different. The needs for the LGBT community when you get older are a lot different. So you have a lot of people, their partners are passing away.
Right.
And because they're not allowed to get married, those rights and benefits that you get when your spouse dies is different for straight couples than it is for for gay and lesbian and transgender couples. And so with the SAGE program, they do a lot of trainings and classes on get your legal issues in order, get your financial house in order, that kind of stuff.
Great.
So it's fun and informational at the same time.
Great. Yeah, I was curious about that. And, you know, clearly a young gay person will have a different set of problems on their hands than somebody that's later in years.
Exactly. So. And we do, and we are finding even older people are coming out, you know, maybe their heterosexual spouse has passed away, or maybe they just decided, I'm 60 years old, I'm finally going to be
life
my true
self. Life is short,
so.
I'm going to come out.
Exactly. And so we do, so there's a lot of different aspects for that particular program, yeah.
That's
so
really cool.
It's very interesting.
So is SAGE a governed like a national, is there a national body that governs it, or is it more of something that just happens on a local basis in a sort of a happenstance similar way across the country, or what's the nature of this?
Well, with our grant, it's pretty much we can do whatever programming that we want with
right.
it, which has been really nice. But the national SAGE organization really started as there really weren't any kind of local programs for this community, and
yeah.
so SAGE National started, and then each individual state could start their own branch. So it's kind of like PFLAG, which is Parents, Friends, and Family of Lesbians and Gays, which is a national organization, and there are different chapters around the country. And so there are a few chapters here in Utah, and so SAGE is like, we're the Utah chapter.
Okay.
And so we don't have to do everything that they do. They don't govern us. There's a local SAGE advisory committee who plan all the events and do all that kind of thing. They're more, you know, if a national kind of, if you need support, if you need resources, here we are for you kind of.
Right. It seems like the essence of the Gay Pride Festival is to foster acceptance and normalization and integration into the rest of society. And, you know, there are some who criticize festivals like this because they emphasize differences rather than similarities. And I'm curious to hear your perspective on that.
Well, I really see our festival as a twofold purpose.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's our largest fundraiser at the center.
Right.
You know, all of our programs are, most of our programs are funded from proceeds from the festival.
Yeah.
And second, it's our way of outreaching to the broader Utah community that, you know, honestly, we're here, we're queer, and we're not leaving.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and so we see it, you know, we do a lot of smaller outreach type events throughout the state throughout the year, but this is one way where we can say to all of Utah, we're here, this is this wonderful organization, this wonderful community, and we're family, coworkers, neighbors, friends, you know, church leaders, like, we're everyday people.
Yeah.
And in Utah, we have a very unique kind of battle that other states, I don't think, face as much as we do, just having the LDS Church headquarters here.
Sure.
You know, we're not seeing a lot of the LDS Church really preventing things that we do anymore within the LGBT community, but they're not actively supporting and saying, hey,
not sponsoring anything.
Yeah, they're not, you know, they're not giving us money to put on the festival.
It's not like they have a float in the parade.
No, not at all. You know, there are contingencies like the Mormons building bridges and whatnot.
Sure.
But, you know, so I think the more we can be out there, and we're not going to stop, and, you know, until full equality is achieved, you know, we're not going to stop being who we are and putting on our festival, because and when I was talking to some community members about a month ago, they were saying, you know, we're all very proud of who we are, and yes, we've kind of accepted ourselves, and I think it's becoming more and more accepting of the community to support the LGBT cause. But that's not why we have the Pride Festival. It's really there to that young kid who's 13 years old, living down in Nephi, Utah, and he doesn't know. He thinks he might be gay. He likes that boy in his history class, and he's not sure how he feels. And he sees one night on the news, you know, thousands of people coming out for a pride parade.
Right.
And he sees all the support and love that those people, he doesn't know them.
Sure.
He has no idea, but he knows that he's not alone.
Sure.
If he sees that, or if he hears that, or the older person who is still struggling with who they really are.
Right.
You know, yeah. Or somebody who's having those issues. Like, if they know that, oh wow, there are 50,000 people in this state who love me for who I am, then there's got to be somebody. You know, there is something better.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I really believe that there's a lot of power and importance in, you know, when you know who you are and what you do, to do it big and be public about it and reach out, because there are other people who may feel the same way and may be struggling. And definitely, you know, doing that gives people the courage to be more authentic themselves.
Exactly.
And, you know, being authentic is so important.
Yeah.
How would you summarize some of the key challenges of the transgender community?
I think they face just a lot of discrimination within the LGBT
community. I'm glad you brought this up. I was wanting to go here. I wasn't sure if we'd get here, but this fascinates me.
Yes.
Please continue.
Well, and for me, and I have to, you know, I have to take a step back and check my privilege at the door, because even I, it's still one of those where I don't know everything. But there has been, there's movement in the LGBT community over the last few years to really become more accepting of the T part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly it's changing. There was a big brouhaha years ago with National Non-Discrimination Act, and the only way that they could get it passed is if they took gender identity and gender expression out of it,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, those are the people who need it the most. It's not just that person who decides, I am transgender, I'm going to transition from male to female. It's that young, that really butch girl in high school who, you know, she dresses like a boy, she has short hair,
yeah.
But, you know, but she may not be a lesbian, but she has that expression of different. She should look like a girl, but she doesn't. And it's for her, who, you know, she might get beat up because, or she might get harassed because of the way she looks. And so, you know, but then also, I mean, the number of hate crimes against transgender people is so much higher than any of the other alphabet soup. And so, I mean, they're one of those communities, and it's just so hard to, a lot of them don't transition until they're older, you know, whether it's cost or just, oh, how's my family going to feel? And I've heard so many heartbreaking stories from people who they decide 50, 40 years old, I'm going to transition. Their families won't talk to them. Their children won't talk to them. And so there are all of these issues, you know, and even some doctors, you know, we have whole programming around getting the right care that you need and seeing the right doctor. And some doctors just, they won't even touch it.
Right.
And they won't, you know, oh, you're gonna transition to a man? I don't even want to.
So tell me this. I mean, in some remote, corrupt corner of the universe, I can kind of understand why some of ultra-conservative straight folks would have a hard time comprehending the transgender phenomena and have a hard time accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have a hard time wrapping my brain around, and I'd like you to help me with this, within the gay community,
mm-hmm.
here's a group of people that is putting on a festival to help promote acceptance and open-mindedness, and yet they still fail to grant that same olive branch to people in a very similar boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, what do you see that could happen, or if you could wave your magic wand, what would need to happen within the LGBT community to help promote more integration and acceptance, and with the T section of the
community? I think it really comes down to, you know, us at the center and other organizations here in Utah, Equality Utah, Ogden Outreach, Utah AIDS Foundation.
Yeah.
We really need to step it up, and we need to have better programming. We need to have a better a message to the LGB parts of our community to say, we were once like that. You know, years ago, and if you think about it, Stonewall happened because of a bunch of drag queens.
Yeah.
You know, there would have been no Stonewall if it weren't for them. The showing people that we're all sexual minorities in some way. We, yes, our issues may be different. I mean, they're even different. Our programming is different from, you know, lesbian women to gay men. It's very different. And the issues that they face are completely different than what, you know, even the bisexual community needs, and even and definitely what the transgender community is. And so what we need to do is just let people know that we were once where the transgender community is now. So 10 years ago is where the transgender community is now, and it's up to us to be the ones. Like, we're at this high level now, you know, the you know, marriage equality, we're gonna get our thing, it's coming. But every day transgender people face that discrimination, whether it's walking down the street, whether it's using a public restroom, whether it's trying to find a job or a place to live.
I think it's up
to us as the LGB and the ally and the straight community to stand up for them. Because, you know, we've asked the straight community as a whole before to stand up for us, and now it's up for all of us to really help our transgender brothers and sisters, for sure.
Yeah, I think they face challenges that may be bigger than the rest.
And it's different, you know. They're very different issues, and that's one thing we've talked about as a staff. Well, we work for all of these people, and how do we really help all of them individually and then collectively? And it's one of those challenges, you know, that we're still learning, and we're still working with. You know, we have great staff. We have 3 transgender people on staff. Our transgender program coordinator, Liz, she's just been amazing in developing programming and resources and things like that, and just making people more aware.
Utah Pride Center's new location is at 255 East 400 South in downtown SLC. You'll want to make sure to check out this year's Pride Festival, taking place from May 30th through June 2nd, with the parade happening on Sunday at 10 a.m. starting at 400 East and 300 South. Be sure to join the Slug Gang or any of your other friends that are wandering through or watching the party. For more information on the Pride Center, visit them online at utahpridecenter.org. Moneypenny are another in a long line of bands that seem to have homes in Utah and beyond. These guys are a pop-punk group, a little quartet that are based in Utah as well as California. They recently released a brand new full-length album called Drowning in My Dreams, and it's going to be released on Wise Move Records. This is a song called Boys and Bands Are Trouble off of Moneypenny's new album. Find out more about Moneypenny. Visit them online at moneypennypunk.tumblr.com. We are here with Michelle Templin, the Director of Community Engagement for the Volunteers of America, an organization that, among any things, runs the Homeless Youth Resource Center here in Salt Lake City. Is that correct?
That's right.
Awesome. Michelle, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to kind of finding out a little bit more about the Homeless Youth Resource Center. Before we get there, tell us a little bit about the big picture, what Volunteers of America has under its wings here in Utah, I guess.
It's quite an evolved story. Volunteers of America in Utah, there are 35 affiliates around the country, but here in Utah, we work to help homeless people, including adults, and our homeless youth center that we'll talk about. And we also help people with detoxing from drugs and alcohol. We have two facilities for that, our adult detox and then a center for women and children out in Murray.
Okay.
That's a great place because women who want to get clean and sober often won't go into treatment because they wonder what will happen with their children.
Sure.
So this is kind of the first step on the road to recovery to come to our detox. Okay. And then we also own and operate Cornerstone Counseling Center, which is multifaceted. We offer outpatient substance abuse treatment on many levels, domestic violence counseling, and we run one of the state's biggest, if not the biggest, prevention program for kids in schools.
Oh, okay.
So, we have a lot going on.
Lots of things and lots of areas that need attention, of course, here in Utah. More specifically, with the Homeless Youth Resource Center, I know you have several little aspects to that, so maybe you could just give us a little bit. I mean, tell us about the drop-in center. Why don't we start there?
Yeah, there's three main components to the Homeless Youth Resource Center, and one being our daytime drop-in center. So youth can come to the center in the morning for breakfast and then go into some workshops and fitness and life skills and meet with case managers during the morning hours. Mm-hmm. And then in the afternoon, we have what we call our drop-in hours. So from 1 to 5, young people ages 15 to 22 can just drop in, eat lunch, eat dinner, get a snack, meet with a counselor if they want to, or a case manager, and have their basic needs met. It's hard. Okay. A lot of people will say, oh, they're homeless, they should just get a job or whatever.
Right.
But it's not that simple for a lot of people. A lot of people dealing with abuse, and when your basic needs aren't met, like shelter, food, where am I going to sleep tonight?
Yeah, hard to think about a job right
It's hard
then,
to go,
right?
I think I'll put on some khakis and go fill out an application.
Right?
Yeah.
Is there a certain time of year where maybe you're more busy, if that's the right word? Does it ebb and flow in a predictable way, or is it just totally random when kids are coming in?
I think it kind of ebbs and flows a little bit with the weather.
Yeah, right.
So when it's cold and rainy, we're obviously more busy during the day. There aren't as many places to go when the weather's bad. So,
or
when it's extremely hot, it's more crowded in the center. But we're pretty consistent with the numbers that we serve. So we are only open 5 days a week due to funding right now, which is kind of a concern.
Sure. That's 2 days a week of totally being out on the street, right?
Right, and we can provide, food bags and boxes and things for people when they're not able to come into the center, so we can help sustain them a little bit. But it's dangerous out on the streets, and a lot of people, majority of the youth probably are couch surfing, so just meeting people, staying with them as long as they can on their couch. But there's a lot of bad stuff that goes along with some of that as well.
Now, is there anything, I don't know how long you've worked with them yourself personally, but is there a particularly surprising aspect to sort of the homeless youth scene here in Salt Lake City or in Utah? I mean, are they younger than maybe people out there might think, or are there more than people might imagine, I guess?
I've worked for Volunteers of America for over 6 years, and every time I go in there, I'm surprised, because the youth that we see there are just kids, and they want to fit in, they want to have normalcy in their lives, but for some reasons, things got screwed up, and now they're in this terrible situation, and it's kind of interesting when I go in, a lot of the youth, you hear them talking, and you got to be street smart and tough, but then they'll sit down and watch SpongeBob on TV or something, and you're like, they are just young people wanting to do young people things, so
right.
it's it's shocking every time.
Well, and a lot of them, I would imagine, are probably in that situation because of something at home, not necessarily because of what they're doing, but maybe because of just the situation with their folks or their lack of folks or whatever it might be.
Yeah, most of the youth we serve have left home voluntarily. So we did a survey a year ago, and the survey shows that more than 80% of the young people that we serve left because of emotional or physical abuse in their home. Mm-hmm. So most of them are seeing parents who maybe are addicts, who are stretched too thin financially and their fuses have gotten too short.
Right.
People who have aged out of foster care, people who may have been kicked out of their home when they came out as gay or lesbian. So it's a wide variety, but there are high levels of abuse.
Yeah, I would imagine.
It's safer, where you have to make the decision, oh, it's safer for me to be on the street
than to be at home with my parents
or whoever's there.
That's not a light decision that anybody would make, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the street outreach that you guys do?
Yeah, that's one of our components, a street outreach. And we have two staff members who literally go out onto the streets, often by on foot with backpacks or on bikes or in our van, and they seek out homeless young people. They can provide basic needs right there on the street, so they'll open their van or their backpack and provide socks and food and water, sunscreen right now because it's getting hotter, really basic things. And they encourage them to come down to the drop-in center. So they encourage them to come down and get services that way.
Sort of get involved with the system a bit.
Have a safe place to come during the day, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, you know, you guys are providing these services and people and these needs. Does your funding come through government, through donations? How does that part of it work?
The funding ebbs and flows as well.
Yeah, right.
Yes and yes. Yeah. We get funding from government sources, including housing and urban development. Some of that's in a little bit of jeopardy, but we rely heavily on the community foundations, private donors, individual donors. We rely heavily on the community to help us fund that program.
Okay. Well, and one other thing that you guys have, the homeless youth transition homes. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, we have a home for young girls. It houses seven young girls, ages 16 to 19, and they live there as if it's their home, but it has expectations. So the girls that live there often are in school, have jobs, set goals, and work toward those goals. So the goal of all of these programs isn't, hey, just come in and eat and take a shower.
Right.
The goal is, let's help you be more self-sufficient. Let's help you be
figure
an individual in society and figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Often, so the transition homes, people can live there until they age out, as long as they're following house rules. And they, you know, they're just like houses, but everyone has their own room. And we're excited because we're getting underway with our young men's transition home. We bought the house a year ago, December, and it caught on fire.
Ah!
In September of 2012. And it was burned so badly that we are going to have to knock it down.
Oh, whoa.
So we're doing okay on the funding for that, although we always need a little bit more to push us to our final goal. But we are going to knock that house down shortly and rebuild and hopefully open in the early fall.
Oh, wow. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, and that'll house. Well, the good news is no one was in the house when it caught on fire. And now that we're rebuilding, we're going to add, I think, two more beds. So we'll have to be able to house 16 formerly homeless young men up to age 22. So that's a little bit older than the girls' home. But again, setting goals, working towards self-sufficiency, having a normal setting to kind of feel like you're
like
part of something, a safe place.
How do most kids come to find out about you guys? Is it from friends who bring them in? Do they just, is it the street outreach? Is there any commonality in those things?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Our street outreach team is wonderful at talking to so many different people and trying to identify who might need the services. Because it's hard, you know, you can't just walk up to someone in the library, hey, dude, are you homeless? You know, that doesn't work that way.
You got that look, right?
Yeah. And often with the youth, they don't have that adult homeless stereotypical look. So,
right, they look like any other kid at high school or whatever, right?
So people find us through street outreach, our library outreach, which is for adults, but they also can refer people to our drop-in center. And through word on the street. That's a huge thing, is that, you know, the youth street culture, people hang out together and
you meet people all the time.
You meet people,
right?
And they tell
word,
people.
Word gets passed.
Yeah, so yeah, we're glad when people show up.
Yeah, that's an amazing program. And you touched on this a little bit earlier, and since this is our sort of pride-themed episode, I know, particularly here in Utah, but everywhere, I mean, kids who come out as LGBT children, a lot of them aren't readily accepted in their families, I guess is the way to say it.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking for like a number or percentage, but obviously it is something that you guys see. Is there any way to kind of tell, you know, is it a certain significant percentage of the kids that you meet, the homeless kids in Utah, or?
Well, I mentioned earlier that we surveyed our youth last year.
Yeah.
And one of the questions was around if you identify as something other than straight.
Right.
And of the kids we surveyed, 33% of them identified as gay, lesbian, transgendered, questioning, queer. They're not sure what their sexual orientation is. So, yeah, we serve a lot of gay youth right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, it's amazing stuff that you guys do. Can you tell us, when people are looking for more information about Volunteers of America or specifically the Homeless Youth Resource Center, where can we send them to find you guys?
You can find us on our Volunteers of America website, which is voaut.org. And that's the same for our Facebook page, VOAUT. Yeah, they can go and find out more about our adult programs, our youth programs. Make a donation. That's always our greatest need, is financial contributions.
And can people volunteer? I mean, do you take volunteers to help?
Sure.
Things like that?
There's a tab on the website where you can fill out an application to volunteer. And we need people who want to come in and cook meals either consistently. We have a local attorney who's come in and cooked lunch every Tuesday for like 3 or 4 years.
Oh, wow. That's
He's
awesome.
Really dedicated. And we have church groups that come in regularly, and individuals and families, or even if you just want to do it once.
Right.
You can cook with our food or bring your own food. So
you guys need all hands on deck.
Yeah.
It'll help. Everything helps, right?
Right. And there's other volunteer opportunities as well. And the age limits and those kinds of things are all listed on our website.
And they can explore some of the things besides the Homeless Youth Resource Center as well on there. So.
Sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Michelle Templin, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. This is your weekly daily calendar for the week of May 28th, stretching into, oh my God, June 3rd. As always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com over and over again during your day and during your week to check out all the new listings going up there. But in case you don't have time for that, I go through it for you once in a while and check out some highlights, and these are the ones for the week of May 28th. On that very day, Tuesday, the 28th of May, Dropkick Murphys, who haven't been around in a while, at least in Salt Lake City, they've been touring in circles around us. They're bringing their Boston Irish punk thing to town with Old Man Markley, who are a blast. They're sort of a bluegrassy punk band out of California. Those two bands are playing over at In the Venue. On the 29th of May, it's more of an indie rock vibe around town. Atlas Genius and the Postels are playing over at Kilby Court. That should be a great show. And I know a hell of a lot of people, probably 10 years older than most of the crowd at the place, will be at Postal Service over at the Saltaire. A blast from the past from 10 years ago. Obviously going to be a big show. They haven't toured ever significantly, and this would be a big one. They're doing a lot of festivals this summer. Thursday, May 30th, Daniel Tosh, the host of Tosh.0. If you're a fan, a very funny dude, he's doing stand-up over at Abravanel Hall. That same night, it's the very beginning of the Utah Pride Festival. There's parties all over town. You want to tune in and hook up on some of those bashes. They're always a great time. Friday, May 31st, it's the beginning of the Ogden Folk and Bluegrass Festival, another great festival happening the end of May. This thing takes place up at Fort Buenaventura up in Ogden. Lots of great roots music, everything from country to folk to bluegrass, some amazing musicianship, and you get to hang out among some old, cool fort ruins at Fort Buenaventura, drink some beer from Roosters, a great Ogden microbrewery, a great time all the time. Saturday, May 1st, it's the Umoca Gala. UMOCA is the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art. They throw a big wing ding the beginning of June every year. Great excuse to get dressed up, have some fancy drinks, check out some awesome artwork all on the walls of the UMOCA, and have a grand time with all the beautiful people. Sunday, the 2nd of June, that is Pride Parade Day. always a great time to go downtown Salt Lake, see this giant rager of a parade going on. Happens at 10 in the morning. You'll want to join Slug Magazine, of course. Look for them on bikes and blades all over the place. And then afterwards, Princess Kennedy is hosting a little pride party at the Green Pig. So Sunday, full day, great time to be had. And then on Monday, you can recover enough for an all-ages show that's over at the Depot. Foals and Surfer Blood should be an excellent one for a Monday night in particular in early June. What a great time. As always, slugmag.com has all the stuff you need to know about what's going on in town. You can add your own events free of charge, and for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some quality content to your listings anytime. I hear Sirens have been kicking around the Salt Lake scene for quite a little while now. They originally formed in late 2005 and released a self-titled EP in 2007. Later on, they eventually released Beyond the Sea and Beneath the Sky, a stellar full-length. That was in December 2009. They're finally back with a new EP. This one's called Between Consciousness and Sleep, and it was released just earlier this month. We're going to play a song off of that called Lights and Clockwork. This is I Hear Sirens. Thank you. download the new I Hear Sirens EP for a mere $5. Check them out at ihearsirens.bandcamp.com. And to find out more information about the group, visit them online at facebook.com/ihearsirens. Equality Utah is an incredibly vital organization here in the state that fights for the rights of LGBT issues all over the state, as well as opposing negative legislation that, yes, does tend to pop up in our cities and towns, even our state legislature from time to time. Slug writer Christian Schultz sat down in the Soundwave studio with Executive Director Brandy Balkin and the Manager of Communication and Operations, Alejandro Mora, to talk about Equality Utah and what they've been working on lately.
Bit about what you guys do with Equality Utah.
Well, the organization is first and foremost focused on changing policy and providing equal protections under the law for gay and trans Utahns and their families, as Alejandro said. Sometimes when people think policy, they think of it at a very elevated level. They think about what's happening with Prop 8, they think about what's happening in Congress, and they don't really think about what's happening at your school district, or they don't think about what's happening at your place of employment. And what Equality Utah really focuses on is policy change at every level within the state of Utah. So from your workplace to your local health care provider to the school board, all the way up to the state legislature.
What kind of issues are facing Utahns right now, politically?
That's a great question, and Utah is one of those states, not dissimilar actually to 29 other states across the country, that really don't have any enumerated protections for LGBT people. So it could be a very long answer to your question, but to simplify it, Equality Utah is working for, and Utahns are currently living in an environment where we don't have protections in employment, in housing, in hospital access, in insurance abilities, in property transfer, in relationship recognition, in adoption. Now, that's not to say that Utah is behind the times necessarily. Again, we're like 29 other states. So there are more states that have policy like Utah than have policy that isn't like Utah.
So how do you go about changing policy in Utah? How does Equality Utah do that?
It is it's a multifaceted process. I think the single most important thing with regards to how policy gets changed has to do with how people are engaged and how empowered people feel. The most effective way to change policy is also the most effective way to change the cultural attitudes, or to change what they call hearts and minds. So really what it looks like is beginning conversations with your neighbors, with members of the PTA, with members of the school board, or talking with your elected officials about issues that are important to you. So I would say that if you feel like it's crazy that someone can be fired or evicted simply because they are or are perceived to have a specific sexual orientation or gender identity, you should talk to somebody about that. A lot of times people think that policy change looks like this very elaborate, difficult, secretive process that only a certain group get to participate in, and that's simply not the case. Today, our policies are made in the state of Utah and at every level within the state of Utah by regular people, by people just like you and me. And the more feedback they get from their neighbors and their friends and their colleagues about issues that are important to everyday Utahns, the more informed they'll be about issues that impact LGBT folks. So I would say that while it might sound simplistic, really the best way to go about creating policy change is by educating, by talking about what you care about, and by engaging in the process as it stands.
I always thought that sort of policy was top down at the legislative level, and that's what you're dealing with, but it seems to me it's stratified through a lot of different parts of life, so.
Absolutely, yeah. And I would even say that at the legislative level, which seems to a lot of folks like it's completely inaccessible, you would be, and I think most folks in Utah would be really astounded by how few people it takes to move a state legislator. A legislator hearing from 15 people in their district is a really big deal. And most of us know 15 friends, 15 neighbors that we could encourage to make a phone call or send an email, and that can change a vote. And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, that's the real deal, you know? And that's what people who are elected to office, That's what they're there for, is to listen to us. And what we also have to remember is that our legislators, and this isn't just at the State House, right? This is City Council, these are mayors, these are people who make policy at all level. They have so many issues that come across their desks or come in front of them every session or every committee hearing. And they're not experts on all of this stuff. So they look to their constituents to provide them information. And if you're passionate, I mean, maybe equality isn't your issue, right? Although I can't imagine it. Equality is for everybody, so I think that everybody should be engaged in equality. But maybe your issue is, you know, air quality along the Wasatch Front, or maybe your issue is education, or maybe your issue is equal access. You know, maybe it's transparency or ethics in government. You really have a huge opportunity to be an expert on that topic and provide information to elected officials about why the issue is important, how it impacts you and your family, and to provide them with information that can really help them make a decision that reflects the values of their constituents simply by sharing your perspective with them. It doesn't have to be an incredibly formalized or have a really high barrier to entry, right? It actually doesn't. What it really requires is for us to feel empowered and to engage.
How do you get that message out there that, you know, many Utahns actually do want to strive for equality?
You know what, when I first came on as a manager of operations communications for Equality Utah, that was really the number one question that I asked myself is, what really is the underlying, you know, I'm not really a big fan of treating symptoms, right? I really want to arrive at the root cause of, you know, what's actually happening. And the number one thing that we commissioned a statewide survey, and the number one thing that was just astonishing to me was that most Utahns had no idea that you could be fired from your job or evicted from your home solely for being gay or transgender. That's the only reason. Most people's reaction, whether they're gay, whether they're straight, everybody's reaction is, what? No, that can't be right. I'm sure it's illegal. You have it wrong. And some people really want to argue with us about it. Like, no, that can't, that's illegal. You can't do that. But, you know, the unfortunate reality is that it is absolutely 100% legal in our state to be fired from your job or evicted from your home just for being LGBT. That was really kind of the inspiration point, right? That's like, this is actually the problem. The problem isn't that people are being fired, right? The problem isn't that people aren't supportive and don't believe that it's wrong, right? The problem is that we just don't know, right? So how do we really get that message out and talk to people and say, hey, did you know this is possible? You know, this is a reality in your state. And once people know, then they're ready to act, right? And they're just saying, you know, of course I'm going to support you. This is absolutely something that, you know, is not consistent with my core value set, right? As a Utah, as a mother, as a woman, right? As a person from the LDS faith, I mean, I really inherently believe that there's no place within a Utah culture for any sort of discrimination. So that's kind of really where I've kind of began our journey of, you know, how do we really get this message out? And how do we really empower people with accurate information? So that we kind of build an environment that allows us the safety net to be able to act and to respond. Because I think for the most part, we do see a lot of kind of fear. Like, I don't want to be the first one to stand up, or what does my neighbor think? Well, I'm here to tell all of you that all of your neighbors agree with you that discrimination is no good, right? And that LGBT Utahns deserve, you know, access to the most basic things, like a way to provide for themselves and their families and a roof over their heads. I mean, it's that basic. And, you know, as soon as we all kind of understand our inherent power, right, to really affect the construction of our, you know, shared communities, that's when we really, that's I think when the magic is happening. And I think as I live and work in the state of Utah, I fall in love with it even more, because I meet, you know, incredible people that are so invested in this valley and just, you know, like Slug Magazine. I think I love this publication. I think they've been around for such a long time, and they've been around when, you know, the topics that you cover were not popular, right? It was super kind of underground and super kind of, you know, very, you know, targeted to a very kind of specific niche market. And now it's like the fact that you guys are here, right? I know Angela, your editor, and we've talked a couple times. You said, you know what? I really had the opportunity to leave
to leave Salt Lake City, to leave Utah, lots of times, you know, and she said to me, you know, I really wanted to stay because Salt Lake City needs me, right? It needs my voice, it needs me to be here, it needs me to contribute and create the community that we can all super be, you know, incredibly proud of, you know? And my goal, I mean, not just within the equality movement, but just in general is, you know, when I travel outside of Utah and people ask me, hey, where are you from? You know, and I say Utah, I don't want them to be like, oh, what's that like, you know? I want them to be like, oh, you know what, I've heard amazing things about that place. What's it like to live there, you know? And I kind of just rolled off on a crazy tangent, but I mean, that's really kind of, obviously I'm passionate about Utah and Salt Lake City and the amazing people that we have here. And I just know that if we all actually just stood up and took meaningful action, this would be such a rockin' place that we can all just be excited to live here and build families here and just have amazing connections that would just, the whole world would just be jealous of what is possible here in the Utah Valley.
This month that Orrin Hatch came out in favor of civil unions. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? What do you make about that sort of change in stance?
Well, I think that the impetus, although, you know, I haven't asked Orrin Hatch about this, so I certainly can't speak for him, but I think that the impetus for him saying that was actually sort of an attempt in his mind to say, look, let's move forward on civil unions and we can prevent access to marriage for the same-sex couples. You know, I think that there's a lot of conversation happening right now around marriage and around marriage equality and around what that looks like and what that means. Having access, as Alejandro said, access is really important. And I think we have an opportunity in this movement right now to also be talking about, you know, access to these benefits that we don't allow to people who are single. So traditional marriage gives us all these benefits. It gives us, you know, you can transfer property, you can share your social security, you can do all of these things if you're within the confines of an accepted relationship. And right now we're talking about if that acceptance should include people of same-sex couples as well as opposite-sex couples. But I think that we're kind of missing an opportunity right now to talk about people who are not in long-term committed relationships who also do not have access to those benefits. And we're missing an opportunity to ask, like, why? Why are we locking people out who are not coupled? Like, do we believe that all people should be allowed to participate in the benefits and protections of our community, or don't we? I'm going to turn this back a little bit to what you asked before about why is it important for queer identities to show up in the political process, and I think that's why, right? To start asking questions like that. So what do I think about Orrin Hatch saying that? Am I surprised? Not really. You know, I think that was a step for him forward in saying, this is our way to maintain traditional marriage, but in whatever that means in his mind, you know. I think it's unfortunate in some ways that a lot of folks who are afraid of marriage equality seem to think that they will be mandated within their faith institutions to marry people that they don't see fit. And what I think is funny about that is that today, right now, today, you could get married in a Unitarian Universalist church in Utah as a queer couple, but it wouldn't give you any protections, you know what I mean? Like, faith organizations can today and should always be able to determine who does and does not have access to their own ceremony, right?
That's, and again, it's different because I can choose to be a part of your organization, right? It becomes a choice, right? I elect to subscribe to this, you know, doctrine, or it's a choice. It's not a matter of, you know, I'm born in this country, so now I get this, except for this, because of who you are, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's really where it's important to kind of distinguish. Like, as long as they're a choice and an opt-in and an opt-out, I mean, I don't have to pay tithing. I'm not Mormon, right?
Right.
That's like, that makes sense to me. Okay, you know, I'm not Mormon. I don't have to pay tithing, you know, but if it was mandated that I had to pay tithing and I never had no idea what it's to be LDS, right? I can't get married in the temple, then that would obviously be problematic to me personally as a member of, you know, that institution. But, you know, that's different than what we're talking about right now.
That's right.
Right?
Absolutely. And so I think that there are a lot of folks who I think sort of miss that piece, right? That religious entities, religious organizations would not be mandated and should not be mandated to provide services or access to folks that they don't deem fit. But our state or our government probably shouldn't be in that business of saying, no, you don't get to participate in this part, you don't get to participate in this part, you know. And historically, we've seen our country continue to move forward to broaden who gets included, right? And that's this whole movement is who gets to be included in this. And I'm going to circle back around to what I was saying before to say, you know, I think we have an amazing opportunity within the movement for equality to move beyond just people who have a specific sexual orientation or gender identity and really start talking about a much greater category of people who have been excluded or locked out from access to benefits. And I think, again, that's sort of the gift that we have to offer the world, you know, not just within the political sphere, although change definitely needs to happen there, and it makes a big difference in the way that we participate in our communities, but I think also in the cultural and sort of that hearts and minds sphere. You know, we have a real opportunity to broaden what it means to be a participant, to be a valued, accepted, and equal participant in our community process.
To find out more about Equality Utah, join their cause, and maybe learn a little bit more about their programs, visit them online at equalityutah.org. As always, thank you for listening to the Sound Waves from the Underground podcast, and we will see all of you out at the Pride Parade, if not at the parties all over the Pride Festival this weekend. We're going to have Jeffrey Stebbin from Yelp back in a few episodes to talk about the best new places in town that have popped up over the past, 6 months or so. We'd like to hear what you think about the restaurant scene and the new things happening. Send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or ring us up on our message line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24/7, and you can let us know your favorite new place in town. We just might talk about it on an upcoming episode. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Next week, you'll definitely want to fire up this bad boy again. It's the 100th episode. We'll be talking to Jeffrey Stebbin from Yelp, as well as summer films with Jimmy Martin, so get back at us.